And welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. We have a lot to talk about this week. It's going to be a good one. Save your hate mail for maybe later on at the end of the episode. Okay, so this week with us, we have Harvard. Hello, Harvard. How are you?
I'm good. I spent all night watching Rurouni Kenshin.
That's a good movie. Yes, we're going to have your review of that up next week because we're doing movie reviews now, which is good. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to your thoughts about that film. And then we also have Matt with us, who's a big fan of Rurouni Kenshin, but unfortunately hasn't had the chance to review the film. Matt, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm good. Yeah, I've not seen the film, and I've heard really good things, so hopefully I'll be able to get a chance to watch it.
Yeah, it really is a good film. For anybody out there listening, if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, maybe wait for Harvard's review. And then go and have a look at it. It's a good one. Okay, so we'll listen to a bit of music and then we'll get going with the podcast. That was our typical Vocaloid music. It's another good track. Hatsune Miku, great. I get to see her live in concert in a couple of weeks, which is going to be just awesome. For this podcast this week, we've got a lot to talk about. And the first thing we wanted to discuss briefly, or for the first section anyway, is Hellblade and, I guess, how mental illness is depicted in games, films, and general entertainment. Because obviously that is a very core theme to Hellblade, which I had a chance to review earlier in the week, and my review's up on DDNet if you want to go and have it. Like I said, the big focus of the game in the lead up to the release and, you know, the conversations about it after release is how it depicts the main character who has mental illness, and it's one of those few games that really went out of its way to try to do that in a sympathetic light and in a way that doesn't make insanity seem like something that's to be feared, I guess. Neither of you two have actually played Hellblade as yet, but you've played a lot of games, obviously, that have got crazy characters in them. And, you know, what are your thoughts about how that is generally depicted in games?
I think it's quite troublesome, because the first thing I think of is, like, generic enemies that yell deranged things and run at you with knives. Like, that's what you see in Bioshock and Borderlands and, like, every AAA game. So, yeah, so far the treatment of mental illness in games is really not that great. There are a few good examples, I think, coming from the indie scene that really explore things like that. Stuff like This War of Mine may be like, coming up, but it's never quite as the focus as what I see Hellblade is going to be about. And it's also never done with the humanity it deserves, I think. It's always done in a very systems-heavy kind of... you're insane, so you lose this many health points every time you move. I think there's a lot more maturity that needs to be had when games start to tackle this topic for reals.
Yeah, I mean the obvious example for me about that is Eternal Darkness, which was a horror game released back on the GameCube. Yes, it was GameCube. Back in the day, and you know, it was a very good game, but it definitely, and it featured mental illness, or your character could be driven insane, I guess, from what they were experiencing in terms of the sheer horrors. And it was all very mechanical. It was just, you know, a thing, and they respond to it, and the game pretends to wipe your game save, or you know, the game flips the screen around so you're playing upside down, and those kinds of things. It was all very mechanical effects as opposed to narrative driven, and you never really got a sense of what the characters were really experiencing, which is where Hellblade is very different. Hellblade has those kinds of features from Eternal Darkness, the desire to kind of trick people or to give people a distorted view of reality through the mechanics, but it's done from a very narrative focus and character-driven point of view, where you really, it's part of the character and part of the character motivation and part of the characterization of the lead. It was done, Hellblade was done in consultation with various experts on mental illness, so it's fairly accurate, you'd think, to the kind of experience that they have. Very emotional to play. There was a number of times I actually had to put the controller down and just kind of take a breath, because yeah, I found it quite heavy. You know, this is the kind of discussions that Lauren haven't in the past, so this is a kind of pioneering game from that point of view. You're really keen on playing it, Matt, so what are your kind of thoughts on the topic and how games have treated?
Well, yeah, I've been really looking forward to playing it, and I just haven't had a chance to dive into it yet. But just like from some what I've read in some of the reviews that have come out and what people have been saying, it sounds like it does a lot of interesting things mechanically, as you said, and kind of, I guess, a bit like what Eternal Darkness did, but with that more narrative focus. And I'm really just... yeah, interested in the way that it, I guess, builds up this whole world of not knowing what's real and what's not, and what you can actually trust, because you've got these voices all telling you different things and telling you contradictory things, and the voices that double as the game's tutorial, but sometimes they're telling you helpful things and sometimes they're not. And it sounds like there's a whole lot of stuff that's built into these systems to really, yes, get to what it feels like to have that feeling of not really knowing what to believe and what not to believe when your own head is lying to you. And I think the best part of that, and which has been discussed in great detail in the day since release, and mostly in, I think, the wrong kind of ways, is this whole idea of the game telling you that if you die too much, you're going to lose all progress and it's going to delete your save. I think that's a really I think that that creates a lot of, just knowing that that's a possibility creates a lot of, it raises the stakes, I guess, and it creates a lot of stress about, well, what's going to happen, like, if I, all this progress that I've made is going to be gone if I make a dumb mistake, or and I mean, other games have done that as well, and but I think in Hellblade it's a very core part of the themes that it's trying to explore, and so I think that's a really interesting thing, and some people might get upset at the idea that it's quote unquote anti-consumer, but I would would rather have something that is anti-consumer and actually has something to say than making every game perfectly fun and convenient because it's a game and so it needs to not be confronting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting one that I a lot of people that are concerned and or angry about that feature in the game simply haven't actually played it, because playing it, it's absolutely essential to the narrative. Like, the game couldn't be what it is without that feature. And I really want to be careful not to give away spoilers, because why there are spoilers, it is that core to the narrative that some of the experience. So all I can say is, that mechanic, despite, people's concerns or disappointment about it, it's not what they're thinking, and the game simply wouldn't be the same without it. So it wouldn't be the first time that people have insisted on, a developer changing the core of what the game is to, make them happier while they're playing it. But I think that Ninja Theory won't do that. I think that they're pretty good at sticking to their guns, and when they've got a story to tell, they regardless of how people respond to it. I like that about them. I like that about the developer.
Can I just say?
The other thing that I really. Yeah.
The whole idea of being anti-consumer is crazy. That's the idea that you want to play the game and just plow through it and not think deeply about anything and kill things and move on. That's the entire mentality that leads to the generic enemy mental illness person that happens in every game. Like, if you play a game and you don't think about the wider context of why it was designed, then what's the point? You just pay money to waste your time and kill things and move on to the next game. Like, if that's what people want to complain about and say it's anti-consumer if a game threatens to delete your save data or, like, threatens to actually make you think about something, then this is a really doomed industry.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if there was one fault, it's not really a fault, but if there was one problem with the way Hellblade's designed, it does look like a AAA game. It looks completely like the blockbuster. People go in expecting it to be a blockbuster and then be a bit shocked. Oh, hey, actually, this is kind of one of those indie art house games.
I didn't come here to think, don't make me think.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why am I not playing Call of Duty instead? There'll be people that actually think that way, and that's, whatever, if that people want to go through life and never,
It's No Man's Sky all over again.
Something like that, I guess that prerogative, but I completely agree that it should not be changed because somebody doesn't like one of the mechanics in it, which is, completely contextual and important to the game. So, like I said, I don't think Ninja Theory is the kind of company that will go and say, oh, crap, we need to patch this because some people don't like it. The No Man's Sky developers from that point of view. I think what we've got there with Hellblade is what we'll be playing down the track, and I don't think changes to fix bugs or whatever. I didn't experience any, but there might be some. But other than that, I don't think this is a game that'll change, which is exactly how it should be. But yeah, I mean, that's you know, one other point that I wanted to quickly bring up is that Hellblade obviously has the main character, which is fairly uncommon. You know, most games that have mental illness put it. The bad guy is the bad guy because he's crazy. You know, that kind of nonsense. It's amazing that the games industry has been around so long, and we're only starting to come to that realization that you know. Mental illness doesn't have to be an evil, but you know the Hollywood does the same thing anyway. So yeah, I'm certainly not saying that this is an issue that is exclusive to the games industry. What was that film? Split. That is absolutely dismal horror film that you know made crazy people out to be you know evil and stuff. It's all very Foucauldian and not cool. So yeah, the more stuff that we have like Hellblade, and the more often that we have you know characters that have mental illness who are not evil, or even that the mental illness doesn't kind of give the character it's just part of who they are. That's a nice future to look forward to. You'd hope.
Yeah, I just want to briefly mention on the other while looking at the other side of games that do it well is a game called The Town of Light. Which I know we reviewed, Lindsay reviewed that earlier in the year when it first came out. And that is, basically it's a walking simulator and it looks like a horror game and it has a lot of those kind of kind of visual design of a horror game, but it's not really, and the developers don't design it, but the developers don't describe it as a horror game, even though a lot of other people do. And the basic idea of that is that you're investigating an abandoned mental asylum as someone who was put into that asylum at a young age and kind of reliving her memories of what that's like. And it's all based, like it's based on a real asylum in Italy that was closed down in the it was in the 60s or 70s due to the cruelty that patients were treated with. And like the story itself is fictional, but again, based on the accounts of the patients that were there. And I think it's a really interesting game because it takes this very overused idea of a mental asylum as a place of terror and don't go there. But instead of quote unquote crazy people being the enemies, it's the asylum itself and the way it was used and the way people were treated there is where the real horror in their game lies. And I think that was a really good game that explored that side of things really well.
Yeah, so more games like that and less like Outlast is what we're saying, I guess.
Yes.
Let's not have more Outlasts there. Trash. Less trash. Welcome back, everybody. So, for the second cast this week, we're going to have a discussion about game engines, which is an interesting topic. I think if you've been on Twitter and followed enough game developers over the last couple of weeks, there's been this ongoing conversation about the reputation that I guess Unity games have at the moment, specifically, and whether Unity itself is a... There seems to be a large number of people that, at the moment anyway, if they see that a game's developed in Unity, they will dismiss it out of mind immediately, which is odd and weird and makes much sense to me. Because, yeah, if you look at what Unity's actually done or what developers are doing with Unity, it's pretty incredible. I think it's a pretty amazing engine. But, yeah, it seems to be that because there have been some games that have not been particularly good that have been developed with Unity, and Unity is that engine that you kind of pick up for free and, you know, you don't have to have any kind of financial investment before you can start using it, which means that anybody, you know, amateurs can mess around with it as well. There seems to be that perception that because of that, there are no good games that use an engine. So, I love Unity. I'm playing through a game at the moment, Shadow Tactics, which is a strategy game, I guess you could call it, a stealth. So a stealth slash strategy game set in medieval Japan. It kind of is, you know, Jagged Alliance, if you played that back in the day, but, you know, with samurais and ninjas. And it's really good, really, really, really good, actually, and was made in Unity. Alone is another game that really stands out as something really memorable to me that was also developed in Unity. So, I mean, Matt, I assume you like Unity as an engine, but yeah, have you got any particular memorable games from that have been developed on that platform?
No, I hate Unity and Unreal is the only engine. Is the only engine I think it's not Unreal as well. I jest, of course, because most games made in Unreal are bad, and a lot of games made in Unity are good. It's hard to think of any particularly memorable games made in Unity just because so many games are, and also I don't pay a huge amount of attention to what engine they're built in because that's not really relevant. But off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure The Town of Light, which I was talking about a moment ago, was made in Unity. Which is just a brilliant game. A few other things I've been playing recently. I think I might be mistaken on this. I think Yonder, the Cloud Catcher Chronicles, was made in Unity.
I can't remember.
Okay. I might be mistaken on that.
I don't remember seeing the Unity logo pop up when you turned it on anyway.
No. Of course, God Wars. God Wars Future Past, which I know you really enjoyed.
And, yeah. And speaking of JRPGs, I think I am Setsuna Wars.
So yeah, there's a lot of really good games made in Unity, and just coming at it from the other side as well, exactly a game developer as such, but I've played around with Unity a lot, and it's not to the point of actually finishing anything or releasing anything, but it is it's a very good engine in terms of finding that balance between ease of use so that you can come in without having to like do a PhD in using this particular engine before you can make a platformer, and having enough power to actually do whatever you want and having the freedom to really go in and go inside the engine and customize it to your needs and do whatever you want. So I think occupies a very important spot between the high-end professional difficult engines and the really introductory stuff like RPG Maker.
Kind of thing with Unity, isn't it? I mean, without Unity, yes, we probably have. There are a lot of games that are quite poor that have been made in Unity. That goes without saying, but that's the same for every engine. But the point that Unity is that, you know, without it, there would be so many games that we wouldn't have either, because it is the only kind of affordable and yet commercial engine for a lot of really small developers. You still have to pay licenses if you want to release the game commercially on console and whatever, but those licenses aren't anywhere near as expensive as if you're using CryEngine or Unreal or, you know, something like that. A small developer of 5 or 6 people, or even 10, you know, who have a really creative idea and something that would be very difficult to finance normally, Unity is kind of the only solution, unless you go, you know, even further back and do some really specific, a very, you know, limited engine like Renpy for Visual Novels. Renpy, is it?
Yeah,
Renpy for Visual Novels, or Twine, or RPG Maker. You know, those are very limited in what they can do, very, very limited. So, you know, Unity hits that middle ground where you can pretty much do anything you want with it, but, you know, you don't have to pay to Unreal to be able to do it. So without Unity, there just would be an awful lot of really great games that we would miss out on, and a lot of developers wouldn't have a chance to make anything.
I think Unreal Engine was made free like a couple of years ago, or they changed their structure, their pricing structure, to make it a bit more accessible for small developers.
But it's still expected to learn, isn't it?
Because it's still just really hard to. And I mean, it must have been some version of it is free, because I downloaded it and tried using it for a little bit, and I was just like, "What is going on?" It is very.
It's really hard to learn, because
Unreal. Yeah,
especially with something like Unreal, I think it's got this grounding of developers working out their own way to use it. And so if you've been a developer for like 5-10 years, you know how it works. But Unity is actually designed for people who originally weren't game developers.
Yeah.
They have this little extra edge of usability to it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. If you're a small developer with, you know, 10 people, if that, you know, working with a really complex engine like Unity or CryEngine, or Frostbite isn't out, but, you know, those kinds of really complex engines take big teams to actually work with and create the kind of effect that you're looking for with them. Sure, you can do some pretty incredible stuff with them. And I say that having, you know, spent plenty of time on Twitter in the last couple of weeks ragging on Unreal, only to realize that, you know, Hellblade is actually developed in Unreal. So
finally, someone made a good game with Unreal Engine.
Yes, finally. I was a bit of foot of mouth in there. But yeah, you could do some incredible things with those engines, but they do require a lot of skill, a lot of talent, a lot of resourcing, and, you know, those things. So again, you know, you might not be able to create an Unreal looking game in Unity, but you can do some amazing stuff with the art direction and whatever, and you don't need to have very expensive staff to do it. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. So for the last section of our podcast this week, we thought we'd talk about something a little bit light, given the previous two sections were a bit hard and heavy. Rhythm games, which is a favorite topic of mine, obviously. I'd never stop talking about Hatsune Miku anyway.
Is there a Hatsune Miku rhythm game?
Oh, there is. Did you know that?
Uh-oh.
But yeah, you know, looking a little bit beyond Hatsune Miku, I guess, this week. Not that, you know, I'm particularly interested in Hatsune Miku rhythm games for the rhythm game bit anyway. But yeah, this week I've been playing Patapon for the first time, believe it or not. I missed the PSP, thanks to Sony, releasing it in a HD version on PlayStation 4. I've been able to get stuck into it the first time, and I've been absolutely blown away. My review's on the DDNet website if you want to have a look at it. Shows me that, you know, rhythm games, you'd never think a place where there's much innovation in terms of gameplay going, because, you know, you're just pressing buttons and pumping. You can you kind of do with that? But a game like Patapon really shows that creative developers can do some amazing things with the genre. In Patapon, you're actually making the music as opposed to following along with the music. You've got to keep to a rhythm, but because it's percussion based, you know, you're responsible for making sure that the actual music is happening. And it's mixed in with some strategy elements and simulation bits and pieces, and it's really clever. So I'm a big fan of it. And Matt, but Harvard, you have, and what did you think of it? Have you enjoyed?
Yeah, I liked it. I actually played it quite a while ago, so not the new PS4 remaster. So I definitely need to go back to it. But I liked how the mechanics kind of came together and how insistent they were that you kept to the rhythm. And so you couldn't just forget it and be like, oh, I'm playing like a war strategy game, like attack, attack, attack. You had to keep methodically hitting those buttons in the time. I thought that was a really new experience. I never had done anything like that before.
Yeah, it's really good. There's a really cool flow about it because, yeah, I pat upon. You've got to basically command your units to do everything. So marching is one command, fighting is another, defending is another. And each of those commands are executed by pressing a sequence of four buttons in time with the music. So different commands. And it builds up this flow where you'll tell your soldiers to march for a couple of, you know, rhythms of beats or bars of music, and then you'll tell them to attack something, and then you'll tell them to defend if there's a big monster that pops up. So yeah, there's this kind of to-ing and fro-ing, and there's these rhythms that build up within the game, and it becomes really, you know, you can kind of feel it as you're playing. And I always found myself tapping my foot along with the beat as I was playing as well, because, you know, I was actually feeling the music. It doesn't look like much, and it doesn't feel like much when you first start to play, but the more you dig into it and the more you let yourself immerse yourself within the rhythms, the better that game gets. It's really, I don't know, it's really primal. It's really cool.
Man, I just had the best idea ever. Okay.
Sorry?
Imagine, I just had the best idea ever. Imagine Patapon X Taiko. And so you got the big Taiko drum, and then you hit the drum to do the inverse. How good would that be?
That would be absolutely perfect. And that's, you know, speaking of Taiko, Taiko is actually coming out in English, which is really great. It's been so long since we've had a Taiko the drum game in English, if we ever have. I can't remember if we have, but PlayStation 4, when it's coming up, is being released in English into the Hong Kong market, so you can import it and then play the absolute craziness of that game. What the menus mean if you don't speak Japanese or read Japanese anyway. But Matt, I mean, are you a fan of rhythm games aside from Hatsune Miku and the Yodel song?
I am. I have fond memories of playing Dance Dance Revolution as a younger and fitter person. Yeah, I really like rhythm games, and I think I really like what you're saying before about how, I mean, the basic idea of a rhythm game is really, really, really simple, and you're pressing buttons or doing something in time to the music, but just the way that different developers have been able to interpret that and build other things around that. And I think one game that I'm looking forward to playing, it's, I don't know if it's out yet or if it's coming out soon or when, is the Metronomicon.
Oh yes, that looks so good.
Yeah, so that is like a turn-based RPG kind of thing, but it's also a rhythm game, so when you select attacks, then you do play a little like rhythm game too, which affects how much damage things do and all that kind of stuff. And then in a kind of slightly similar vein, a game that came out a few years ago called Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is like a roguelike dungeon crawler type thing. But again, everything you're doing is in time to the music. And if you try to move when offbeat, then it just doesn't work, or you end up like killing yourself. And yeah, it's just quite interesting seeing just the different ways that different developers are interpreting that. And even something that's not a rhythm game, but Rayman, was it Rayman Legends, I think, which isn't a rhythm game, but then there are some rhythm levels in there where you just, by the way the level is designed and where the jumps and things are, you kind of find yourself playing with the rhythm anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I haven't actually played Crypt of the Necromancer.
Necrodancer.
I keep eyeing it off, and people keep recommending it to me. I just haven't had a chance to, but it does look really good, and I'm really looking forward to Metronomicon. That game just looks like over it. But yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention were the rhythm games. Another type of rhythm game that I really like are rhythm games where, like, musical instrument without it, you know, I'm not talking about stuff like Rock Band or Guitar Hero. I'm not talking about those kinds of ones where you're actually playing, you know, a fake instrument. I'm talking more like stuff like Voez, which is, I'm still ridiculously addicted to that one. I've been playing it, you know, for months now. The way that one's structured, it's like Hatsune Miku games in that you just need to tap the screen at the right time as an icon pops up. But the way that you need to do it with two thumbs or, you know, two fingers is your hands are kind of dancing across the screen, and it feels very, you know, kind of piano-like in terms of the way that you're interacting with the screen, which I find really interesting, and as somebody who plays the piano myself, really, you know, engaging. So yeah, those kinds of rhythm games really appeal to me as well. Funnily enough, that kind of rhythm game, actually the core mechanics don't get me in that much. So yeah, all my addiction to those games is more to do with the music itself. But yeah, the core rhythm is quite basic in those games. So I prefer when developers do things a little bit more creatively. Yeah, Harvard, what are your kind of rhythm game fetishes?
must you say that? my absolute favorite one is Rhythm Heaven for the Nintendo series.
Those are great.
Yeah, they're like a one-button rhythm game. So you just press or hold, but the way they do that is so smart. Like, they make an entire level theme about it. Like, if you ever play Warrior World, you'll know what I mean. Like, they make a little level, and you need to do something in time to the rhythm. And the way they do it is just so clever and so inventive that you forget that you're just pressing one button. But at the same time, the rhythm inputs are really, really strict. So if you're not good, you will mess up hilariously. Like, it's... If you've played those games, there's a game called, I think, Food Bear or something. Like, you're a sad bear and you're overeating, so you've got donuts in one hand and your cakes in one hand, and you eat one, you eat donuts with one bun and cakes with the other bun to the rhythm of the music. It's so good.
I mean, those games were actually designed to teach people rhythm, weren't they? Was that the game designer, that was his intention, was to use them to help encourage people to develop better rhythm?
Yeah, I think so. It was the director, I think, or the music director, is also the director for this idol group, Hello Project. So they do Morning Musume and some of that groups. And that's why the music is so catchy. But I think he also wanted to help people enjoy music in that regard more.
Yeah, I remember reading that. He's a big personality in Japan. It was great for Nintendo to be able to get him on and do those rhythm games. It'd be nice to have one on the Switch now, actually. It's been a...
Oh, definitely. I would play that so much.
Yeah. Did you ever play those, Matt? Have you played any of those?
I think I played the demo of the most recent one on 3DS, and yeah, I really enjoyed that, but never got around to actually playing the proper game. But yeah, I see what you're saying, Harvard, about it is that they're very simple games in terms of just the levels, the way they're designed, and with using like one or two buttons. But then even just the way that the designers use those simple tools to create something so fun and captivating is really impressive. On a completely different direction, this discussion just reminded me of something, a video I saw recently, which is probably fake, but I'm just still so impressed anyway, of a game that somebody seemed to have made where, so this guy had his phone and his cat was lying on his phone, and he was playing a rhythm game by rubbing his cat's belly.
That's awesome.
And as I said, probably fake, because I don't know how you do that, but the way it was a very entertaining video to watch.
Well, that's kind of the other great thing about the rhythm games genre. You mentioned mobile, so that's what got me thinking about it. The rhythm games don't really require any particular platform to work really well. A rhythm game on a mobile phone is every bit as good as a rhythm game on a console or PC or whatever. It doesn't really matter what platform you're playing it on, which is really great, because if you're on the train, it's got 5 minutes to kill. It's the kind of game that you can pull out and just play and enjoy it for very short periods of time as well. I know I'm looking at my phone now, and most of the games that I play on it these days are rhythm games of one type or another, rather than the other stuff that goes on phones.
Gotcha, RPGs.
RPGs. I've got Fire Emblem Heroes, I guess. That's not really a rhythm game. I've got VoEZ on my phone as well. That's Cytus. That developer in general is great. Demo is another one. Yeah, Rayark is really good at rhythm games. They nail it. Groove Coaster, which was a great one that Square Taito actually produced for Square Enix back in the day. And of course, the Miku iPhone game. I've got that as well. Yeah.
If you've got Miku an iPad Flick, as that's well, actually... grab Jubeat, I think, by Konami. That's a really difficult game. Like, if you... do you know the Novation Launchpad? Like, it's like a music production system. It's just a bunch of buttons, and you press it in time. Jubeat is like that, but like a rhythm game of it. And so you need to tap the squares to the time of the music. But the choreography of it is very difficult. I'm moving my hands.
I'll check
them a little bit. I just realized you can't see what I'm doing, so it doesn't make any sense.
No, I'll have a look into that one. And then just quickly, I mean, the other rhythm game we should all mention and everybody should play, even though it doesn't even look like a rhythm game, is Thumper.
Yes.
Thumper is just incredible. When we're talking about innovation in rhythm games before, we really should have mentioned Thumper, because it's right up there with the most innovative kind of rhythm game you could imagine. Like, it's billed as rhythm violence, I believe. That's what they term it as.
That's how they describe it. And that's what it is. It's a weird, difficult game to describe. I can't even I reviewed it, I think, and I don't know how I managed to write 1,000 words of review on that, because it's such a brilliant game, but also very difficult to describe. But Rhythm Violence is as accurate as you can get, I think. And
yeah,
if you have the option, play it in VR, because even though it doesn't, it's fundamentally the same game in terms of how you play and what you do, but just the experience of it in VR, and it's the way it just, it's an assault on the senses, regardless of how you play it, but VR just takes it to another level.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to describe it, like you say. The great thing I think about it, the great thing is that I wouldn't be able to was to hear the game's music on a CD or whatever, to put it on and I was to listen to it now, I'd recognize it as a stump of music. But I never really notice the music while I'm playing that game, because I'm just so focused on
the
movement itself and trying to stay in the movement and just feel the beat rather than listening to it, because you just have absolutely no time to really experience anything else. So feel what's going on and try and react. And yeah, it's one of those games that kind of transcends music itself, which is amazing for a rhythm game.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's a bobsled game, but it's sci-fi and you're a beetle and there's a giant disembodied head called Crackhead trying to kill you. you beat it by like sliding around a bobsled track and smashing into walls in time to the music. So if that doesn't convince you of the game's merits, I don't know what will.